Peace be with you. Welcome to the Dean Show. I'm Eddie, your host. This week on the Dean Show, we're going to be talking about the Chattanooga shootings and the Charleston shootings. We're going to be talking about all of this and much, much more with a professor from the Arizona University who is a sociologist expert, political science expert. We got an expert on the Dean Show to shed some light on many of the sad situations that are happening on the ground here and all over America with my next guest. Don't go anywhere. We have a lot to talk about, a great and exciting program full of great information. You don't want to miss out. We'll be right back. Peace. Assalamu alaikum.
This is the Dean Show.
Welcome back to the Dean Show and our special guest, professor from the Arizona University, Professor Musa. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much for being on the Dean Show. Can you tell our viewing audience, because it's your first time on the program, a little bit about yourself, Professor?
Absolutely. So I'm the managing editor for the Southwest Initiative for the Study of Middle East Conflicts, also known as SISMEC, based out of the University of Arizona. And I'm a cognitive sociologist by trade, but I focus a lot on the Middle East and terrorism as well as sort of related to that.
So this is really your expertise, sociology, people, and politics, political sciences. You're the right person for the job, an expert in this area. You had really sad situations occurring. You had the Charleston shooting recently. It's already kind of fading in the news. And now recently the Chattanooga shootings that have happened. And one is considered kind of like a lone wolf. But on the other spectrum, you have a whole religion being blamed for this situation. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, so there's sort of two trends to take note of. So the first one is that in the case of Dylan Roof in Charleston, as you pointed out, when he committed this crime, they immediately tried to portray him as a lone wolf, and often they also try to portray white terrorists as mentally ill. In the case of Chattanooga, Roof, the FBI has said they won't even consider that terrorism. That's what the FBI had said, is that they're not considering that terrorism, even though it was clearly a politically motivated attack. It meets the FBI's definition of terrorism verbatim, but they're not going to call it terrorism. In the case of Chattanooga, the FBI said that they're going to consider it terrorism until it's proven that it's not. So the starting premise when an Arab or a Muslim commits a crime is that it's terrorism. And the starting premise when a white person commits a crime is that it's not terrorism. So that's important. And then the issue of mental illness, there's also a big difference. So again, white terrorists like Joseph Andrew Stack or Dylan Roof or any of these guys are immediately considered to be crazy. They talk about, oh, they're depressed, or they're bipolar, they went through a divorce, you know, whatever. In the case of the Chattanooga shooter, he's diagnosed as being bipolar. In the case of Nidal Malik Hassan, the Fort Hood shooter, he had sought treatment for his own mental issues because they were going to send him to Afghanistan. He was a conscientious objector. He tried very hard through the process to get out of being sent to Afghanistan. He talked to people about his sort of struggles with this and with the fact that he was being sort of discriminated against in the army. People were using racial slurs and stuff against him. And he talked to counselors and he sought treatment and he tried to go through the legal process to get out of his predicament, but there was no exit for him. And he snapped and he went on a shooting rampage. But his mental illness was never considered. It was not even up for discussion. So when So in virtue of being a Muslim, basically, you can't be mentally ill. You're a cold, calculating, criminal mastermind. Whereas if you're a white person who commits a terrorist act, you're definitely crazy. So that's, you know, those are some of the opening disparities there.
You had someone who was kind of forgotten. He's back up in the news. But not too long ago, James Holmes, he was the Dark Knight movie massacre. He killed 14 people. And he was actually a Christian, not to disparage on any Christians, but he was someone who was part of the Presbyterian Church. And again, they looked at his mental illness. He wasn't someone now, imagine if he was a Muslim. And then you have the Robert Duggart, who was a Christian, and he was putting together a plan to massacre an entire community. And this didn't get no wall-to-wall media coverage.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up Robert Duggart. Yeah, because he was a Christian minister and a failed congressional candidate. His plan was to, quote, utterly destroy a predominantly Muslim suburb in upstate New York. And the campaign was going to include bombing a school and a mosque and then going on a shooting rampage to kill as many people as they could. And it wasn't just him. He got 9 other people that agreed to join this plot. With this crusade. And the astonishing thing is, so he was caught in the middle of this, of carrying out this plot. He had acquired weapons to do it. He had made, as I said, contacts with co-conspirators. It was an imminent terror plot that was foiled. So when a Muslim is intercepted in the middle of an imminent terrorist plot, they're usually sentenced to life in prison. Mr. Duggart was, he was sentenced to home detention. He lost his gun permit, and he was fined $30,000. That's it. That's it. And his co-conspirators, to my knowledge, weren't charged for anything at all. And then more recently, there's been a lot of protests from Muslim groups and civil rights groups, and so now he's facing some additional civil rights charges. But in terms of his sort of criminal liability, he got, you know, a very short home detention thing and a fine, whereas a Muslim who was intercepted committing anything near that same scale would have been sentenced to life in prison, generally. And the worst part is when a lot of times Muslims who are intercepted in these plots, the FBI, has people in a lot of Muslim communities to kind of keep an eye on Muslims to make sure they're not getting radicalized. And if they think that someone might be prone to radicalization, a lot of times they basically entrap them. They in some of these cases where people have been foiled and accused of trying to carry out a plot, it was the FBI who helped suggest the plot. It was the FBI who helped, you know, provide them with fake weapons and fake, you know, passports and stuff just to get them to say that they'll do this thing. And then they get arrested. But no one was ever in any imminent danger. It's just that in virtue of seeming sympathetic or willing to carry out an attack like this, you get life in prison if you're a Muslim. But if you're someone like Mr. Duggart, who actually came up on his own initiative and formed a whole coalition to carry out a massacre, you know, you get a fine, you get house arrest. That's a big problem.
Why is it that most Americans, they've never heard of Robert Duggart? He's not a household name. He's not getting the kind of press, the wall-to-wall media coverage that many of these other people, as soon as you're connected with anything of Islam, you're all over the press. But in this case, no.
There's huge disparities in media coverage as well. So consider, for instance, A good sort of side-by-side comparison would be to consider Joseph Andrew Stack III. He was this white guy who was anti-government, anti the IRS. He did a suicide bombing on the IRS echelon complex in Austin, Texas. He killed a federal agent, caused millions of dollars in damage, and he was hoping to kill hundreds because there's hundreds of people that work there. They were just arriving for the day. But for the grace of God, he would have killed hundreds, especially if there was bigger structural damage to the building, which he intended on his manifesto. So he commits a suicide bombing that kills a federal agent, right? Now compare that to Abdul Farouk Abdul Muttalib, this Somali kid who tried to commit a suicide bombing via, he was called the Christmas Day bomber, but he had an underwear bomb that failed. So he didn't kill anyone, he didn't hurt anyone, he didn't even really damage the plane except for mild cosmetic damage. The only person who was hurt was him. But as a result of Abdul Muttalib, they put in body scanners in all of the in a lot of these airports. You know, it was wall-to-wall coverage about it for, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks. Joseph Andrew Stack killed someone, caused millions of dollars in damage, nearly killed hundreds, and the FBI just said, well, he's just a crazy guy, lone wolf, even though he clearly belongs to a an ideology that's fairly widespread. And, you know, the media was basically over it the next day. As soon as the FBI said, it's not terrorism, it's just a lone wolf, that was it. There was no commemoration for the federal agent who died. There was no, you know, no big policy changes to prevent something like this from happening again. In fact, because the government refused to do any kind of policy change to prevent ideologues like Mr. Stack from carrying out more attacks, the IRS decided that they were going to investigate these kinds of right-wing ideologues in the hopes of breaking up some of these groups so they don't get attacked, because they're the target of a lot of right-wing attacks. And as a result of that, of their probe into right-wing groups, when that became public, Republican lawmakers started a witch hunt against the IRS, and so the FBI is investigating the IRS now for having investigated right-wing groups, rather than investigating the terrorists who committed the crime and people who are sympathetic to that terrorist. They're investigating the IRS for investigating the crime. I mean, it's insane. It's really terrible.
Insane, indeed. What it is, insane. And we have a lot more questions to ask Professor Musa here at the Dean Show. Moses, by the way. Professor Moses with us. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Please subscribe to The Dean Show. Follow us on our official Facebook and Twitter pages in the links below. Please also help support The Dean Show by making a donation in the link below.
Back here on The Dean Show, I hope you're benefiting. I truly am. Some amazing facts brought to your attention that are out there if you want them. Indeed, it's insane. The contradictions, the hypocrisy, and wall-to-wall media coverage for a Muslim. He's a lone wolf, but they make him out to be like a representative of Islam, which we know Islam is free and clear of a lot of these extremists. And you have also written an article exposing many of the other people who are doing heinous crimes, getting no wall-to-wall media coverage. 60,000 plus people have been killed, majority of innocent people, many also American, 5,000-6,000 plus, decapitation, training of young kids to commit their heinous terroristic crimes. In this article, talking about the cartel, can you discuss this with our audience? Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. So what's astonishing is that anything that people are upset about, that ISIS does, the Mexican drug cartels do as well, and on a bigger scale. So if you're upset about enslaving women, the Mexican drug cartels enslave far more women than ISIS. If you're upset about beheadings, the Mexican drug cartels behead far more people than ISIS. If you're upset about, just the sheer number of death and destruction, the cartels kill more people than ISIS, and they kill them in horrific ways, often, you know, mutilating their bodies. And I mean, people were concerned about ISIS having burned a guy to death. The cartels do that. They've burned people to death, but they've also cut off someone's face and sewed it to a soccer ball. They actually killed and cooked an American and ate him. And that was not a news item.
They cooked an American? They ate this American? This group?
They ate him, yes.
Wow.
I mean, so there was widespread news coverage actually about a year ago when one of the Al-Nusra people, one of the sort of fighters in Syria ate someone's heart, and that was a huge deal, right? They were talking about it all the time. Oh, these like jihadi cannibals out there in Syria. But there was nothing. But that wasn't even an American. But somehow the American news media doesn't care when an American gets killed, cooked, and eaten. And in fact, even in terms of American deaths, right? More than 300 Americans were killed in just a few years on the Mexican side of the border. And on the U.S. side of the border, the drug cartels control the overwhelming majority of the drug trade in the United States. And if you look at drug-fueled violence and other cartel-fueled violence in the United States, the cartels have killed more Americans in just a handful of years than the entire campaigns in Iraq, Afghanistan, and all domestic terrorism since 9/11 combined. And yet, no one wants to talk about the Mexican drug cartels, and we're all talking about, you know, Islamic terrorists in the Middle East who can't really effectively carry out too many strikes here. I mean, it's a threat that can be largely contained.
Really amazing points, amazing facts, bringing them to light so people can really think and ponder and reflect about the sad reality. Now, another reality is that people have more of a chance of being killed. Is that true? By lightning, maybe secondhand smoke, or get this, your furniture, than some kind of supposed Muslim terrorist here in America. Can you comment on this?
Yeah, and not just Muslim terrorists, but if you look at all terrorism since 9/11, you're talking about, you know, even considering when you add the new cases in, since 9/11, then you're talking about around 80 people that have been killed since 9/11 by all terrorism, regardless of if it's Muslim, white people, whatever. So that's a very small number of people in more than in roughly a decade and a half. You know, we had tens of thousands of Americans that kill themselves, that commit suicide in this country every year. We have hundreds of thousands of people that die in accidents every year. We have more than a million people who die as a result of medical malpractice and preventable diseases, etc., every single year in America. So, if people were concerned about protecting Americans' lives and their well-being, then, you know, investing in things like healthcare, infrastructure, psychological care, these things should clearly be a bigger priority than terrorism. In fact, even the police, just this year, just in the first half of this year, have killed more than 600 people. So the police killed six times as many people just in the first half of this year as terrorists have killed since 9/11 in a decade and a half. Terrorism is not a major problem, and Muslim terrorism is not even a majority of the very small problem that terrorism is to begin with.
Professor Musa, tell us, you also wrote another article discussing about the greater threat.
Hey, I'm a racist, I certainly am.
The rising threat of right-wing extremism.
So the combined total of far-right extremists active here in America is in the hundreds of thousands. Now compare that to ISIS supporters. We have probably just a few thousand of those.
What's the answer?
Well, the answer is we are desperately in need of more resources here in America to combat this problem. I can personally say that we have hundreds of analysts in the U.S. government looking at Al-Qaeda and ISIS and their affiliates, but we have mere dozens of analysts looking at non-Islamic extremists here in America.
That's coming from the domestic terrorists here who have nothing to do with Islam or being a Muslim.
So again, it's important to underscore that the supposed threat of terrorism is overstated, and that by making terrorism such a big deal, that's actually what gives terrorists power, and that's actually what encourages people to carry out terrorist attacks. So in a large part, we're sort of playing into the hands of, we're creating an atmosphere where terrorism becomes more appealing by the way we react to terrorism. But again, with regards to how terrorism shakes out, it's almost always native-born white men. So right now, it's the right wing that's that's carrying out most of the attacks. But previously, like during the Cold War, it was mostly leftists, but still, it was native-born, you know, white men. But right currently, post 9/11, the terror threat has been overwhelmingly from the right. The left-wing terrorism is pretty much stopped in America right now, so it's mostly right-wing terrorism.
We're going to go ahead and take a break. Right back with more with Professor Musa. Don't go anywhere.
Please subscribe to The Dean Show. Follow us on our official Facebook and Twitter pages in the links below. Please also help support The Dean Show by making a donation in the link below.
Back here on The Dean Show with Professor Moses Musa. And you've covered the 60,000 plus people, a lot of it decapitations, people being eaten alive, it's right next to our borders. No wall-to-wall coverage. We discussed the Robert Duggart plan to massacre a whole entire community. Gets off basically with a slap on the wrist. No wall-to-wall coverage. And then you have the domestic threat here of terrorism. Nothing to do with Muslims or Islam. You have more of a chance of being killed by your furniture than you do some kind of Muslim extremist. But again, Muslim blows a firecracker, and it's wall-to-wall coverage, and this fear and hysteria, boogeyman type of movie drama is coming to get you from Islam. People are all scared because ISIS 24/7 is going to come knocking on your door. Is this some kind of hidden agenda here? It's kind of obvious, this hypocrisy. What do you think?
Yeah, so you raised a good point here. That I want to sort of tease out a little bit, and then I'll get to the main question. But you mentioned how right-wing people, when they commit terror attacks, no one asks the right to condemn the attacks, to disassociate from these people. In fact, we never even discuss the fact that a lot of these crimes are committed by people impelled by the same kind of ideology. There's a worldview that impels this terrorism. And the same is true with cartels, actually. So usually when people try to explain the difference of how they treat Muslims versus everyone else, they say, well, the difference is that Islam and Muslims are sort of unified by a certain ideology to carry out these attacks. And that's problematic. I mean, it's problematic because a lot of the ideological views that they ascribe to ISIS, obviously, most Muslims don't subscribe to them, but even a lot of ISIS people don't subscribe to them. They join ISIS for a number of reasons, and probably a lot of them, actually most of them that are from Iraq and Syria aren't joining because they agree to the cause, but because there's economic pressures, social pressures. For instance, in rebel-held Syria, ISIS is pretty much the only game in town if you want to be able to feed your family or, you know, stay safe or whatever. So a lot of people are sort of affiliated with ISIS for those kinds of reasons, not because they're sort of hardcore jihadis. But we never talk about the ideological underpinnings of the drug cartels. We never talk about the ideological underpinnings of these right-wing terrorists, even though that is largely what motivates the violence in these cases. And it's important to confront those ideologies. And it's really disturbing because a lot of right-wing people actually sympathize when so when someone like Dylann Roof commits this church shooting in the name of the Confederacy, a lot of people sympathize with this whole idea that America is being taken away by minorities and we need to assert our white rights and we're in the middle of some kind of culture war. You know, so many Americans actually sympathize with this, and not just in America, but, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
Perhaps millions of people in Europe and in the West. And in fact, the right-wing ideologues are the primary terrorists in Europe as well. It's the same ideology, and it's never confronted. And until you confront it, you know, it's going to keep, it's what enables it to continue. And the irony is that the very people who are responsible for most terror acts in the U.S. and Europe, these right-wing ideologues, are the people who are championing the anti-Muslim fervor in these same countries. And, you know, that's largely a deflection, but from their own sort of crazy. But, you know, then there are other incentives, too. So if you're a media company and you're trying to decide how to cover terrorism, Muslims are a pretty small, you know, minority in America and in Europe. So if you alienate them, it's not a big deal, per se. Whereas if you're alienating people who sympathize with right-wing ideology, that's potentially a lot of viewers, that's a lot of, you know, advertising revenue that you potentially lose by. And then, you know, on top of that, you have to face possibly massive, you know, social media and other retaliations, even lawsuits. So, you know, when you provoke the right, you know, they hit you back. And I've experienced this myself, actually. I've been the face of a number of smear campaigns by Fox News and Breitbart and other right-wing groups accusing me of being a terrorist sympathizer simply because I call out these kinds of, you know, disparities. So it's tough. It's tough to actually confront this, because in order to really confront this ideology, it can't just be Muslims and it can't just be minorities that are calling this out. Other white people, especially Republicans, need to be the ones condemning this and challenging these views. And that's not happening. They're protecting these extremes.
Another interesting point is that the supposed experts that come on to talk about Islam and Muslims, they have more in common with this fringe element, ISIS, that obviously doesn't represent Islam, that the majority of the Muslim scholars in the Muslim world and more Muslims are actually dying and being killed by this fringe element. But the people who have more in common with ISIS and the extreme element are the people who are the so-called expert, non-Muslim experts, who interpret Islam in such a crazy and extreme way and leave off the real scholarship and the real people who are out there advocating for peace and understanding, and so they shun them off. You don't get to hear them in the main media press, but they go ahead and find the worst of the worst to put them up high and give him the microphone. Do you see this contradiction?
The right-wing extremists and the sort of ISIS extremists actually reinforce one another. And at times you can literally see them doing this. So for instance, when Pamela Gallagher had that Draw Muhammad contest, and then these two people tried to commit a shooting or a massacre there, they failed. They didn't kill or injure anyone. They died in the process. But again, this is another case where the media, though, made a huge deal about it. And if you tuned into Fox News in the aftermath of that, they had Pamela Geller on defending her acts, and the person that she was talking to on the other side, Fox presented as a Muslim cleric, but it was actually Anjem Khodari, who is ISIS's number one propagandist in the UK. And he's very upfront about this. This is what he is. He's an ISIS propagandist. And they had him debating Pamela Geller on Fox, but they didn't disclose the fact that Anjem Khodari is an ISIS propagandist. They just presented him as a Muslim cleric. So people who watch Fox heard Khodari talking about how Pamela Geller should be stoned and stuff like this, and they thought, oh, this is what Muslims think. This is how Muslims feel. Because they go out of their way to find the most extreme people to sort of put side by side with someone like Geller for the sake of misrepresenting, because they want, you know, it's these two extremes just feeding on one another and perpetuating the conflict.
It really seems like the KKK, who was at one point 5 million plus members strong in America, they didn't go away. It just didn't seem like the cool thing to wear the, you know, the white thobes that they were wearing. But now that mentality, that racist, bigoted, I'm white, I'm right, and everything else, we need to get out of sight. That mentality, now they just maybe, it's still there, but they put on the nice suits and they got the air. It's really sad to see, really sad. What advice do you have for the sincere Americans who are out there, who aren't bigoted, who aren't racist, who want to live in peace with their neighbors. And that's what Muslims want to do. We want to live in peace, have peace with our Creator, peace within ourselves, and peace with humanity. But now for them to see through all of this confusion, what advice do you have for them?
So the one of the most important things you can do is just listen to actual Muslims. You know, you can't, there's all of these experts post 9/11 that are not Muslims talking about what Muslims think and how Muslims feel. And a lot of them are full of crap, you know. And some of them are motivated by various, you know, financial and other things to intentionally misrepresent things in a certain way. It's disturbing. For instance, if you watch CNN and they're talking about terrorism and it's a whole panel of 50-year-old white men, you know, talking about Islam and Islamic ideology, you should probably take that with a grain of salt. But that's the norm. So, you know, when you're confronted with this sort of a view, what you should try to do is find an alternative viewpoint by listening to actual Muslims and trying to get a diverse array of Muslims, because, you know, Muslims are not a monolith any more than blacks or anyone else. We have diverse viewpoints. We disagree about stuff. And, you know, people need to be aware of that, and they need to dig in there and try to just get a more nuanced grasp of how Muslims feel if they're concerned about Islam or if they want to know more about Islam.
Professor Moses Musa, tell us where people can go ahead and read some of your articles that we've discussed today with you and how they can get a hold of you.
So my website is fiatsophia.org, so fiatsophia.org, or I run sysmec.org as well, and there's links to my work and to my website there as well.
Thank you, Professor. We started with peace. We end with peace. We look forward to having you sometime in the future back on the show. God bless you. Jazakallah khair. Assalamu alaikum. Peace be with you. And thank you, the sincere viewer, the sincere person with an open mind, open heart, who really wants to know. Look, he's coming to the Muslims to find out, what's Islam got to say about this? What do Muslims have to say? And now you've heard our voice. Now you decide. We had a lot of ground that we covered in a short amount of time. We talked about the double standard. We had the sad, tragic events that happened at Charleston and Chattanooga, and one was considered a lone wolf. But now other people are trying to hang and go to war with Islam because some person went and did a lone wolf act, and now you're trying to blame a whole religion. So are you part of the problem, or you want to be a part of the solution? And we talked about Robert Duggar, who's all of a sudden his name just got swept under the rug. You don't know about him. And this individual who is a minister, a Christian minister, now do we blame Christianity and Christians for this crazy, deluded person's plot and plan to massacre a whole entire community of Muslims? And you know by now, by watching the Deen, a Muslim is like what Jesus was, because Jesus was a Muslim and Abraham was a Muslim and Moses was a Muslim. They all what? Submitted to the will of God. This is what a Muslim is. One who's figured out the purpose of life. And that purpose of life is what? To connect with the one who made life, who gave us life. And we love Jesus and his blessed mother. And you get to learn those things in previous shows. So now he wanted to murder all these people that love Jesus. And he got a smack on the wrist. No wall-to-wall media coverage. James Holmes, who was also the movie massacre, he was looked at as a lone wolf, but he was also a Christian. You also have Andrew Breivik, who killed over 77 people. And why do I mention these people? Because now many people are assuming that Islam is the problem. But no, you don't see Muslims doing the majority of these horrific acts. You don't see that. But it's made to appear so to the average layman that yes, Muslims and Islam is the problem. But I'm sorry, it's not. Spend some time with the Muslims. Learn Islam from the scholars here in America who are out there, and their voices are not being heard, but they've got a strong presence in the Muslim community. Talk to them. Invite them to be on Fox News. Invite them to be on CNN. If you really want to be a part of the solution and not the problem. And that's what it seems like many people are a part of. They're just anger and bitter. Because when we look at the root cause of all this, it's that racism and hatred that was with the KKK, but now it's still in the hearts of the people. It hasn't been eradicated. It just put on a new costume. It just has a new appearance. So as the KKK, we can spot them really loud and clear. Many of these people now, we can spot them by the false fear, rhetoric, the bigotry that comes out of their mouths. So let's not listen to people such as this who are trying to disunite humanity. Let's really support and look towards creating an environment of peace and understanding. And if you have any questions or concerns, please call us, 1-800-662-ISLAM. Initiate a healthy dialogue. Let's talk. Let's try to be a part of that solution, not the problem. And we hope that you tune in every week to the Deen Show, where we cover some very exciting episodes, very exciting topics. We'll see you next time. Until then, peace be with you.
Please subscribe to The Deen Show. Follow us on our official Facebook and Twitter pages in the links below. Please also help support The Deen Show by making a donation in the link below.